This weekend starts right after this.
It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The months ahead for COVID. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
What can we expect during the winter from the coronavirus? We'll examine the good and the bad scenarios.
Reinventing yourself on the job scene when the coronavirus upended everything you've done your entire career.
Tired of hearing about politics and the bad news of 2020? Hear where you can live under a rock for the rest of the year.
And a touchy question surfaces in the Alabama Senate race. How did Tommy Tuberville's Auburn football team get upset by Vanderbilt in 2008?
Because Tommy has really never really been in the political arena before this, his opponent is kind of working with his background as a coach in terms of, you know, how to criticize and evaluate him as a leader.
Lane Higgins at the Wall Street Journal on the clever opposition research. Well, the fear among some health officials is that coronavirus cases will rise as the weather turns cold, as more people do things like spend more time indoors, get ever more tired of public health measures, and struggle with conflicting messages. Karen Weintraub, health reporter at USA Today, says no one really knows what the next few months will bring, but there are a few clues about what's likely to happen, both good and bad. Karen, what are we looking at?
So coronaviruses are seasonal. They tend to get worse in the winter. That's why one of the reasons we tend to get common colds in the winter. And so there is a concern that things are going to get a lot worse before they get better.
If they get worse, does that necessarily mean things are going to lead to a bad flu season or not necessarily?
Well, hopefully if we're wearing masks and keeping distance and washing our hands, we won't get the flu as much and getting vaccinated, that will keep the flu down. But it shouldn't add to the flu. But of course, if people are out and about, they're likely to get the flu and COVID.
Mm. All right. So what's the good news in all of this?
The good news is there are a few things coming that could change the face of the pandemic. One is this rapid testing, cheap rapid testing. Maybe at-home testing. If I could get a test every day before leaving the house and know that I wasn't contagious today, I could live my life a lot more normally. Or if before I got on an airplane, for instance, I would feel a lot better if I'd had a test and everybody else around me had had one.
Right. The testing, though, as has been mentioned, you know, sometimes isn't the timeliest. Sometimes you can pick up the virus after you've given
a good test. Right. The type of testing I'm talking about really isn't available yet. The type of testing you can get now, it's called PCR testing, usually takes a day or two to get the results or a lot longer in some cases. And so that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is a new kind of technology that's coming. The federal government has just bought 150 million of these, which will help. And there are some other new technologies which should be around hopefully in the next few months, coming to some scale. So, for instance, college students, a lot of colleges now are testing their students once or twice a week. And so as long as they keep that bubble and keep testing, the kids can more or less act normally at college.
Hmm. We're speaking with Karen Weintraub, health reporter at USA Today. She's written a piece entitled, What Can We Expect from a Winter COVID-19 Second Wave? All right, you also referenced the danger signs, the bad news scenario. What's that?
Yeah, so like I said, COVID does seem to be seasonal. It probably will get worse, more contagious during the winter. We're also obviously inside more. At least in my part of the world, I'm in Massachusetts, it's already getting cold here. So people will spend more time inside and be in more contact with each other. So I think as of yesterday, 39 out of the 50 states were showing increases week over week from the week before.
Right. You brought up the point too. How can we accurately know if and when things are getting worse?
Right. It's kind of hard to know immediately. It does take a week or two for people to start becoming symptomatic, to become sick enough to be hospitalized. And so some early warning signs. People are using sewage in some cases, college campuses. The city of New Haven is very proud of their system in Connecticut. And that very early on in the virus, as you're infected, you start to shed virus and it can be picked up in the sewage. And so that's considered an early warning sign.
In the sewage?
Yep, in the sewage.
What does that? What does that even mean?
It means that you are passing the virus as you go to the bathroom.
Oh, geez.
And that can be detected.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I did not realize that.
Yeah.
So that's something done by Public Works, I guess?
Yep. Yep. Public Works. And some college campuses are doing it. And like I said, a few municipalities are doing it through their sewage system. And it's hard, you know, you can't say this person at this address has it,
sure.
But you can say that the volume of virus is increasing, suggesting we are having a growing caseload.
That's something. Wow. All right. So advice here as we head into the winter months, does it stay the same? Wear a mask, keep distant?
Yeah. I mean, I hate to be boring, but it's the same advice from you know, all year. Wear a mask, keep distant, wash your hands, particularly be careful in these indoor settings. Within 6 feet, they say, I would say maybe a little bit further, and for more than 15 minutes. So offices maybe don't want to reopen yet. Environments that you're in for a long period of time. The grocery store is probably okay. But again, I would wear a mask and wash my hands when I came out.
Very good. Anything else you want to drop in that stood out as you were pulling this together?
Yeah, the one thing that people are really worried about are the holidays, gathering together with family. It's hard. I know I feel I have trouble imagining that any of my family members could be harboring a dangerous virus.
Sure.
And so it's hard to imagine that it could be a dangerous situation, but experts are quite concerned about Thanksgiving, plus the travel that it requires to see family members oftentimes.
Thanks, Karen. Karen Weintraub, health reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, clawing back jobs for the disabled taken by the coronavirus. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, see how we can help at planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. While the unemployment rate among the disabled community had been falling steadily for years, it got trounced during the coronavirus pandemic. By April, the unemployment rate for those with a disability skyrocketed to nearly 19%. As of the most recent data, the unemployment rate for those with a disability was 13.2% in August, compared to the 8.4% national unemployment rate. How can those numbers rebound? We're joined now by Neil Romano, chairman of the National Council on Disability. Neil, set this up.
Well, to begin with, Gordon, you know, the people with disabilities are twice as likely to be unemployed under the best conditions and twice as likely to live in poverty. So when you get something like a pandemic or you get something even like a hurricane or something where people are required to stay home if they're non-essential, it really has a tremendous burden on people with disabilities, because more often than not, people with significant disabilities are the ones that fall into the non-essential categories, so they lose jobs. The point is, you know, whether or not when this all gets back together, and I believe America's going to come back, we always come back, whether or not their jobs are going to come back. And the, you know, this month, National Disability Employment Month, it's a good time to have this conversation about how we make sure those jobs come back and even flourish and grow.
All right. So on that point, how do you claw back, say, the jobs that were lost?
Well, I mean, you have to continually remind, first of all, remind the businesses the value of these employees. And the value of a person with a disability is tremendous. I mean, it has been proven A survey by Accenture and some other groups proved that their value in the workforce is generally above and beyond other employees, which is something that, you know, employers are starting to see, and they're starting to harvest. They're starting to look at people with disabilities more closely as a good source of employment. Plus, you have to realize that over the last 20 years, people with disabilities have now, because of things like IDEA, have gotten good educations. So they're more work ready than they were before. But what we really have to do is we have to make sure that we get people with disabilities into better training programs out of high school and more equipped for the jobs of the 21st century. Unfortunately, too often they're being trained for jobs that are not quite as competitive in that regard. And so when jobs get lost, sometimes these folks lose their jobs.
Back up for just 1 second. What's IDEA? Sure.
That's when a person gets an individual education opportunity at school, when they have the right through legislation for a parent to request a special opportunity for their children in school, so that if there's someone like myself who has dyslexia, who cried his way through school, they get the extra help they need. You know, they get the extra help they need. They get the consideration for that. If they're a person who's blind or a person who's deaf or a person in a wheelchair has a difficult time getting to and from, that exceptions are made, accommodations are made to make absolutely sure that they can get a good education, so they're not left behind simply because they have a disability.
We're speaking with Neil Romano. He's the chairman of the National Council on Disability. This is National Disability Employment Month. You referenced programs out of high school. That seems like a heavy lift when we start involving the education process. What would the job genie create here, Neil, if he or she could wave a magic wand?
Well, you know, it's not even what the job genie creates. It's taking a much longer look. Historically, what we've done is we have decided what kinds of jobs we're going to train. What we need to do now is very effectively, we need to look at the workforce going forward and figure out how we train them for those jobs and the things that are going to be needed going forward as opposed to jobs going backwards. So, for instance, we've got to take a better look at those things that are using technology, areas that people can fit in now and do certain things in certain ways. We were talking about the pandemic. Very honestly, you know, there are virtually no benefits from a pandemic. But one of the things we see is a greater willingness, for instance, to allow people to do telework. I am very hopeful that that will be something valuable for people with disabilities, because many, many people with disabilities are ready to work and can work. The issue for them, and they have skills, I mean, office skills and everything you might imagine, but often the problem for them or the barrier is transportation. The opportunity to work from home could be an absolutely dynamic thing for people with disabilities. I think about things like, you know, operating, you know, order taking and all the things that we're doing now in this new economy. As we order on phone, we order online, having people doing things like that. Those are the kinds of jobs that we should be looking at down the road, because those are steady jobs into the future.
Thanks, Neil. Neil Romano, chairman of the National Council on Disability. Coming up next, the bizarre question that's become a part of an Alabama election campaign. To say that 2020 has been a year of uncertainty is an understatement, right? The way we work together changed overnight. Businesses learned pretty quickly that to adapt, they need a new way to get the essential resources they need. That's how Fiverr can help. Fiverr's online marketplace connects you with freelancers for hundreds of digital services. Things like graphic design, web programming, film editing, and a lot more. And there's no guessing games. You customize your search by service, deadline, price, reviews, whatever matters to you. And you know the cost up front, no negotiating at all. Whether you're launching your first business, scaling your current business, or in need of extra support to complete a project, Fiverr's global network of on-demand freelance talent has worked with the most influential brands in the world and is here to help. Check out Fiverr.com and receive 10% off your first order by using my code Gordon. Find all the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Again, that's Fiverr.com and code Gordon. Well, the U.S. Senate race in Alabama this fall features the typical pressing 2020 questions about the pandemic, the Supreme Court, and the economy. But one question that stands out, how did Republican nominee Tommy Tuberville, former football coach at Auburn, lose with his star-studded team 14-13 to Vanderbilt way back in 2008. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Tommy Tuberville, the GOP Senate candidate in Alabama, is refusing to debate Democratic Senator Doug Jones. So Democrats are turning to fodder from his coaching career in the campaign against him. Here with more, Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. Lane, tell us a little bit about Tuberville and his background.
Well, Tommy Tuberville was a coach for about 25 years, and he bounced around a little bit throughout his career, started at Ole Miss, then went to Auburn, Texas Tech, and Cincinnati. And he is now deciding to run for Senate, and he beat Jeff Sessions in the Republican primary back in July. And this is the kind of the first time that you've really seen a former SEC football coach really with this, you know, clear of political intentions. And I think, you know, because of that, and because Tommy has really never really been in the political arena before this, his opponent is kind of working with his background as a coach in terms of, you know, how to criticize and evaluate him as a leader.
Since he was the coach at Auburn, there are certainly Auburn fans in Alabama and Alabama fans in Alabama. How is that? How have Democrats used that?
Well, it's been funny because Tommy is probably best known for his six fingers taunt, which is that every year that he beat the Crimson Tide in a football game, he held up a finger. And it started around the fourth consecutive win, and then it became, you know, fear the thumb, and then, you know, oh, six fingers. So Alabama fans kind of have a bitter taste in their mouth about Tuberville because of that. And some Auburn fans, you know, sure, he led them to six consecutive Iron Bowl victories, but they still remember a lot of, you know, noon games that should have been blowouts that Tommy ended up losing, like a 14-13 loss to Vanderbilt in 2008. And the Democrats have kind of been calling attention to some of those games and trying to, you know, bring up the emotions of the six fingers with Alabama alumni, and also to bring up the upset losses amongst the Auburn alumni to kind of get fans to reconsider all of their perhaps positive thoughts about this man who is otherwise an SEC football coach.
How is Tuberville using his coaching experience to promote himself as a senator?
You know, there hasn't been a whole lot of that. It's mainly just that Tuberville has aligned himself very closely with Trump and has said that, you know, he doesn't believe that his opponent stands by Alabama values, and that he, on the other hand, would, you know, vote in support of building a wall and some of the, he would vote to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court if he were in the Senate now. And I think there's some aspects where he is very, very closely aligned with the president, but he hasn't really talked about how, you know, being a coach and essentially being a CEO of a football team has prepared him to run. That's, football is only really being made a campaign issue by the Doug Jones camp.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. The Democrats are using his coaching days and the fact that he had so many jobs in such a small amount of time. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, Tommy kind of had this nice way of putting his foot in his mouth wherever he went. And, you know, for instance, his first job at Ole Miss in the SEC, he said that, you know, they'll have to carry me out of here in a pine box when rumors started flying about him leaving. And then 2 days later, he accepts the job at Auburn. And at Auburn, you know, he had a very successful run for about a decade. In his last year as coach, he lost the Iron Bowl 36-0 to Nick Saban. And, you know, he kind of just, it sounds like he threw in the towel that year and he stepped away, he resigned. But he still got his $5 million buyout from the university, which is something that I think is based on contracts, it's negotiable, but it is also something that's usually just referred to or reserved for coaches that are fired, and Tommy was not fired. And then he ran an investment firm for a few years and went back into coaching at Texas Tech. And while he was at Texas Tech, at a dinner with a recruit, he took a phone call and accepted the head coaching job at Cincinnati and then walked out of the dinner. So he's kind of known for these infamous moments where it's maybe not the most graceful approach to dealing with fans or players, but, you know, that's also the game of coaching is a little bit different than the game of politics in terms of, you know, what the rules and the decorum are. And I think it's not that crazy uncommon to see coaches kind of hedge and say, oh, I'm not going to leave this place only to get a promotion and leave very soon.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with Wall Street Journal sports reporter Lane Higgins. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. We've heard for years that it's important to have a diversified portfolio, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of thing. But if you've ever looked at a breakdown of the most successful portfolios, you'll typically see real estate. So why isn't it one of the first asset classes you consider when you're looking to diversify? Well, simple. It hasn't been available to investors like you and me until now, thanks to Fundrise. Whether you're new to real estate investing or a veteran, Fundrise can help. Fundrise is an investing platform that makes investing in high-quality, high-potential real estate as easy as investing in your favorite stock or mutual fund. Fundrise manages more than $1 billion in assets for more than 130,000 investors with a team of real estate professionals that carefully vets real estate projects. Start building your better portfolio today. Get started at fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. That's FUNDRISE.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. Fundrise.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka coming up this half hour. If the industry you've worked in your whole life is shrinking, how do you reinvent your career? Also, managing your pandemic meltdown and how you can literally live under a rock to ride out 2020. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. A new survey from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds that nearly half of the people who lost their jobs during the pandemic now believe those positions are gone for good. Tips on reinventing yourself from Louis Grovance, business consultant and also author of a book called Service is a Superpower, Lessons Learned in a Magic Kingdom. Louis, how do we do it?
Everyone should think of themselves as self-employed. Everybody should think of themselves as a small business owner from now, even if you work for a Fortune 500 company. So one of the reasons I wrote the book, for years at the Disney Institute, these big companies would come and we would help them redesign their service programs or their identity. And I thought this should be available for people, single people or small business owners in the workplace, you know, helping people to, design their intention the same way a big company like Disney does. And right now, you know, a lot of people are going to be overwhelmed because they have 15 important things to do. And when you have 15 important things to do, it's hard to get to the first one. You know, at Disney, we used to have this acronym, WIN, What's Important Now? Because right now, people need to create any kind of forward motion. So literally, what is in front of you now? Literally, physically, even if it's just washing the keyboard in front of you, anything to get any kind of forward motion going. And also, right now, everybody at some point in their work career has delighted somebody. That's a Disney term, delighted somebody. Who is that? Find those people. And if for no other reason besides the obvious potential of connecting with people and networking, you're going to need to see yourself through the eyes of people that know you as success. Right now, up front. Yeah, as you start redefining your narrative, I know that's another oft-used word, narrative, but you know what? That's what you are now. We're all brands and identities. And as we go forth right now, we're going to need to think of ourselves and compartmentalize our work ways in the same way.
How are we going to, say, begin a reinvention of ourselves if we now realize that our job loss is going to become permanent, given this environment?
First, realize that just like a business always has an emotional backing of whatever they've provided, you know, like Disney sells happiness. You go to the doctor and what they're selling is health and well-being. First and foremost, take a hard look of your skills and your weaknesses and what's always been the emotional backing of what you've done best. What do you sell? You know, and also you might find yourself in a job right now that you might not like, a new task, not a career. And, you know, I was a child actor until I became too hairy to be one. And then I played kids until I was 24 and my hands got too hairy. So I became a waiter after being a television actor, which usually isn't the way it goes. But, you know, it was great because I realized, you know, like the book says, service is a superpower. And so what I would say to anybody that finds themselves in a task rather than a career right now, be great at it. be great at it, because excellence seeks and finds other excellence.
Yeah.
Whatever is in front of you, you know?
Thanks, Louis. Louis Gravance, business consultant, again, author of a book called Service is a Superpower. Coming up next, helping family members with money. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles, since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. How far would you go in helping other family members financially, and how much help would they provide you? Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, is a believer that we're among each other's greatest assets and liabilities. Here's how he sees the rest of his life as he becomes a grandfather. Jonathan, what inspired this?
So, Gordon, I wrote this piece as I was in the middle of preparing to move from my current home to Philadelphia, and I'm moving close to where my daughter and son-in-law live, and they are about to have their first child, who will be my first grandchild. And so, you know, something like that makes you reflect on your life and think about what you want to do with the years, I hope decades, that remain. And there, I have a couple of things that are important to me. I want to continue to do what I think of as good work, you know, be of service to others. I want to try and have a little bit more balance in my life, work a little bit less, and spend more time exploring the world. But the thing that I focus on in this particular article, and it's really very important to me, is providing help to my family. One of the things that I think is a great gift to family members is to stand ready to help them financially if they have hard times. And having that sort of family safety net, I believe, can be a big boost to happiness.
All right. So your mindset in all that comes from where?
A lot of it actually comes from the research into money and happiness, but this particular insight certainly resonates with me. A lot of people think that happiness lies in the bigger house or the faster car, but you get those possessions and pretty quickly you adapt to them, and the bigger house is just another place to live. The faster car is just another way to get around town. Instead, to me, in terms of money generating happiness, one of the key ways that we should use money is to bring a sense of financial security to our lives. In a sense, money is a negative that we want to remove. We don't want to be worrying about money. And if you're smart in the way that you handle your financial accounts and do save regularly and you have some sort of cash reserve, you eliminate those financial worries and thus you will be happier.
You referenced before that you are trying to find some balance, and you mentioned the piece that you've been accused before of being a workaholic, but you don't necessarily see it that way.
No, I think it's one of the other ways that we can use our money to achieve happiness is to save diligently, get ourselves some financial freedom, and then be able to spend our days doing what we love, what we find meaningful, what we find fulfilling. Now, if you have a high-paying job and you find that super fulfilling, that is great. But for most people in the work world, what they discover is that the job that they're paid to do, while they might enjoy it, is not the thing that they're going to find super fulfilling.
Yeah.
Instead, what they're going to find super fulfilling is something that provides them with relatively little monetary income, but a lot of psychic income. And so one of the things that you can do if you're a good saver starting early in your life is buy yourself the financial freedom to devote your days to those things that you do find meaningful, that you think are important, that you feel you're good at, where you really feel like you're doing something important in the world.
Yeah. We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece about three items that top his wish list in what he calls his remaining years. The piece is called Pay It Forward. When you talk about helping your family, you referenced in the piece, you were helped by family before with a mortgage. You have helped others in your family with a mortgage. That can create some uncomfortable situations at times. I don't know, if you don't get that money back, for example.
Absolutely. I mean, you should not make a family loan unless you're confident in the sort of financial wisdom of the person you're lending to. If they have bad financial habits, you know, what we're going to end up with is a loan that doesn't get repaid and a lot of bruised feelings. But I do think that everybody should think about their family and think about their family as both an asset and a liability.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, your pandemic meltdown. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
For the ones working tirelessly to keep their coworkers safe, for the ones rising to new challenges, for the ones rebuilding stronger than before, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, and 24/7 support. It's part of our commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, glad you're with us. Have you had what some call a pandemic meltdown yet? It happens after you've held it together for all these turbulent months, and then something seemingly small happens, and suddenly you're screaming or sobbing or throwing something. How to identify the meltdowns and manage them? From Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, help us out.
Yeah, I like this because I wanted to write about meltdowns. Everybody's sort of snapping. We've reached our breaking point. We have these short fuses right now. But some people say, oh, I've never had a meltdown. Well, the thing is, when I started to research this, it turned out meltdowns come in different ways. People often think of them as the adult tantrum. You're like crying or screaming. And it can be that. It can be sobbing or rage, but it also can be silence or an emotional shutdown. It's any kind of loss of control where you just sort of snap off.
All right. So you described in the story that you can actually have an effective meltdown. What does that mean?
Yeah, I love this. Because if we're all melting down, let's try to do it the right way, right? So you can. So psychologists say that meltdowns actually serve an important purpose. They let us reset. We get rid of painful emotions. We get to express them, get rid of them. And now all of this energy that we spent on suppressing those emotions, it's gone. And now we can use that energy to do something more positive, go back to our life, focus hopefully better. So the issue, though, is that you really need to have the correct type of meltdown. You can't have the bad kind of meltdown where you're hurting somebody else, you're taking your emotions out on other people, or if it's happening too often, that's also a problem. But you can have an effective meltdown, and then the piece, I give advice.
So you said, too, you can plan ahead for these things? How so?
So plan ahead is one big one. So if you start to feel like you're really not that resilient at the moment, so you start to feel like you might want to cry or you need a little break, take the break. Go cry, go for a run, do whatever you do to de-stress or to let out those emotions before they become so overwhelming that you really lost control of yourself. So do that first. And then also, if you should know ahead of hand what you need when you feel a meltdown coming down or you need a break coming on. So know what you need. Do you need a pep talk? Do you need to be hugged? Do you need to be left alone? And then relay that information to the people around you. Let them know so they know what to do, because it's very uncomfortable when you see somebody melting down and you don't know what to do. And this will keep your relationships much happier.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein, relationship columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called The Art of the Pandemic Meltdown. Do men handle this differently than women?
Well, you know, I didn't really look into that. The psychologist, or I did, and the psychologist said, you know, there's no real research on it. I think the stereotype, again, is that men might go off and be silent, need time alone, not communicate. They may feel that that is not the meltdown, not the traditional meltdown, but it is if you're not behaving normally. They need to understand that. And another big piece of advice is to accept this. Don't judge yourself. Everybody does this. Right now, we are living through very difficult times, and so it's normal that we are exhausted from keeping our emotions in check. And we're living with a much higher level of all these emotions like anxiety or fear or anger. So it's hard to keep those in check. It's exhausting. We will lose control more often. So don't judge yourself. Just try to release this energy and the emotions in the correct way.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bernstein, she writes the Bonds column for the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, where you can literally live under a rock to finish out 2020. Well, finally, have you had your fill of politics and pandemic lately? Feel like you want to live under a rock for the rest of the year? Well, now you can actually do that, at least for 5 nights in early November, thanks to a place underground in New Mexico. Hotels.com is offering a stay in an off-the-grid, man-made cave 50 feet underground from November 2nd through the 7th in the town of Farmington, New Mexico. The company says it's transforming an age-old idiom into a bookable experience so individuals can relax, recharge, and recover, because who knows what else 2020 has in store for us. Staying in the unique property costs just $5 a night, so $25 for the full 5-night stay plus tax. The price is an Abraham Lincoln-inspired presidential rate, according to the travel booking website. Photos of the property show off rooms with stone walls and an interior decorated with a rustic feel. It's also soundproof. The booking page went live Friday, and reservations are taken on a first-come, first-served basis. Guests will have access to a rooftop terrace, a picnic area, hiking and biking trails, archery, and more. There's also a full kitchen and bathroom, plus Wi-Fi and TV. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.